If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But I love eating people. I love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic. There'd be a lot of poop in my pants.
Seen a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree?
Welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. I am the great and powerful Mr. E.
And I am J Clone 6.
4.
Season 6.
Woo!
Cryptids of Corn Season 6 starts now. Welcome.
Welcome back to Season 6. Hopefully you enjoyed the season break with some Patreon episodes we released.
Yeah.
They picked too.
Oh.
They voted. I know. Time travel, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy. No, season 6. So I have a whole list of things. You all know the topic because you read the title before you got into here. But it's the Groot slang.
The Groot slang.
Which Mike from Cryptid HQ, this is one of his favorite cryptids.
Oh, it is?
He's been asking us to do a Groot slang episode forever.
Well, here you go, Mike.
And it's one of those that's, you know, it's besides maybe Mokele Mbembe, probably one of the other best-known African ones in other parts of the world.
Okay. Just Africa.
Right. That's what I mean. Like, we know most people in the cryptid sphere in the U.S. knows what the Groot slang is, roughly. They know what Mokele Mbembe is.
Definitely, yeah.
You know, so that's kind of like the internationally, you know, recognizable names for the world.
Right.
From African folklore.
It's like they're Loch Ness almost, like they're Nessie.
Essentially, you know, it is one.
It's big name, internationally known.
So before we get to the Groot slang, we have a lot of fun front of the house stuff. For all you people, that, like the three of you that complain about this, I'm sorry, but there's going to be a lot because it's the start of season six.
Yeah, it's new season. We got to get it out.
The first thing we would like to say is thank you.
Yeah, big thanks.
And I just know seriously that we've come a long way and it's been such a fun ride and we still got a long time to go, but
it's been a wild ride.
3 years ago, did you know this is what it was going to be?
No, I still don't know what it's going
to
be.
Well, I mean, to the level we've gotten, it's been such a blessing.
Yep.
We just want to say thank you to all you listeners and the fans, supporters, everybody that kind of comes to conferences and sees us. You know, it's whatever. If you listen to the show, thank you so much.
You're just as much a part of this as we are. It's all one thing.
Well, as Jay is.
Yes, that's accurate. I'm you. You are we.
Yeah. No, but no, seriously, thank you guys.
Yes, much appreciated.
Anything you'd like to say in reflection?
I'm with you. Sentiment, big thank you. My favorite part about all this podcast and stuff is meeting and interacting with people that we now call our friends.
Mm-hmm. And thank you guys. Hopefully you guys liked this season five finale. It's up there with some of our longer ones.
Took a while.
Eight hours, 42 minutes, I think is what the runtime is consecutively.
Yeah, all in one day.
You could listen to it in a work shift if you're working over an hour.
No, I'm saying we did it in one day.
Yes, but we took many a break.
Yeah, oh yeah. We had to. It's physically impossible.
I could have done it. You were the one that was like, let's go move a stove.
Yeah.
No, so, I hope you guys liked it. We had a lot of fun doing it. It was definitely, all of the season finales definitely have a different flavor. And that one was like many rapid fire of many like little known cryptids and the cannibal dude that really meant he wasn't a cannibal and all kinds of fun stuff.
Yeah,
that's one that the row. He's seen the row.
If you haven't listened to season five, I highly recommend doing that first.
Not as good as season four.
Or season five finale. Sorry.
That was a joke.
Oh.
I said not as good as season four.
Why?
Well, because me and Emily were in the hospital for a good chunk of season five.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
It was still good.
There's like a quarter of those episodes are recorded in Ronald McDonald House's lobby.
Yep. Or in an airport.
All right. Let's get to some reviews from Crazy Goose Girl 04, which she's on the YouTube all the time. I love the topics and in-depth they go to them. I generally enjoy the banter and off-topic conversations. It makes me feel like a natural conversation, like it's not scripted pieces. Feels like I'm just sitting with friends. Thank you.
That's what it is. Yeah, thank you. Script?
There is just the info script, and that is pretty much it. C. Trumbly? Trumbly.
Ooh.
14 says, the title is Alien Face. Like, that's the emoji.
Oh, okay.
And I love learning about new cryptids. 5 stars.
Simple. Thank you.
If you guys leave a 5-star review, we'll read them on the show.
Absolutely.
New Patreon members. Caitlin Thomas.
Welcome.
Andrew.
Welcome, Andrew.
Ron Durlip. Durup.
Welcome, Ron.
Patrick B.
Patrick. Welcome.
So conferences.
Okay. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining.
Yeah. As this one coming out, we've already done our Hocking Hills Bigfoot Festival. We've already done Squonkapalooza. So it was so fun hanging out with you guys. Thanks for coming out and hanging out with us. We had so much fun with you.
Dang. We'll do a review
after. We'll do reviews of each of those after we've actually been
there.
Them.
Yeah.
But recording before those events. But can't wait. Events we have coming up. We have Bigfoot and Brews in Dowaljack, Michigan. We have Mothman Fest. We're not bending Mothman Fest, but we'll be there. If you're going to be there, let us know on the Facebook or Instagram. We'll hang out. We'll do hangouts. We normally do like a couple walkthroughs of the Point Pleasant TNT area together. We kind of talk about what was seen where and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah. So yeah. And then our event.
The Ohio Bigfoot Jamboree, October 5th. Open to anyone that wants to come see.
Speaker tickets are officially sold out. But the vendors market and the contest and the fun games and stuff that's been going on
and
for
the
whole
day.
The food and the music is open to the public.
If you just want to spend a good old evening, or not even afternoon, on the weekend, celebrating Bigfoot with like-minded folks, the place to be is the Ada Park.
Ada War Memorial Park.
Ada War Memorial Park in Ada, Ohio, October 5th. at the Ohio Bigfoot Jamboree.
It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, my last little piece of information before we get rocking and rolling here is t-shirt winners from the t-shirt contest we did. We never really announced them on the show with how we were block recording and stuff like that. Yeah. So I just want to announce it. Michael Thompson.
Woo! Thank you, Michael.
And he did the
atmospheric
the mushroom monster. Yeah. We're riding it. J-Clone, Snallygaster, atmospheric rays are in there.
He's got a lot.
So Michael's shout out is he has the Wenzel Hofner book series.
Yes.
He has the Chicken Boy book series and the Orb book series. Please support Michael. I'll try to make sure I put links below for all the books, or at least maybe his main page so you can find all of his books. Chris Goings.
Chris, thank you. He did the Wild Ride.
The bus.
Yeah.
I think it is the Wild Ride, but I think I have it labeled
the bus. Yeah.
Because we say a lot that it's a wild ride.
Yeah, we do.
We just said it in the intro to this episode. It's been a wild ride.
Wow.
But no, so Chris does Black Sheep Studios art. He'll be at the Ohio Bigfoot Jamboree. He did the bus logo, and he's working on a second logo for us right now that we just seen the sketches for. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
He also does Nevermore Hollows podcast, which me and you were featured in.
Yeah.
On an episode, hunting down a certain formidable tentacled cryptid.
Hop over to Nevermore Hollows and take a listen.
Yep. And I'll let you read the last one, because I don't want to mispronounce his last name, because he's so nice.
So you're putting it on me? Okay. Troy Bursch.
Bursch.
Yeah.
Because I always want to say Bush, and I know that's not right.
It's got the R in there.
Yeah. No, Troy. He does Into the Abyss podcast. He sent us stickers and a really, really nice letter. Thank you, Troy. He did the, I think I called it Making of a Crop Circle, where it's the two aliens sitting in lawn chairs in the cornfield.
Yeah, yeah.
It says Cribs of Corn. But I think the name of the shirt in the shop is like Making of Crop Circles, or Before Crop Circles. Because it looks like they're sitting there getting...
Right.
Maybe a little intoxicated.
Man, if we were aliens shooting a launcher documentary,
there you go.
That's what it would be.
All right. So all you people skipped ahead. Let's talk about the Groot Sling.
Okay.
Now, the Groot Sling, I have the creation story. I have like the basic info, sightings, and all the fun stuff, what it could be. This was a very interesting one to do for a season opener because I'm going to spoil some stuff here.
Oh, no.
No modern day sightings that I could find.
Oh.
Maybe.
Ooh.
So we'll talk about that later.
You knocked me down, but you picked me right back up.
Maybe. No, but the Groot Slings, in several African cultures, they have several different creation stories with the Groot Sling. So I made my own version with a compiling of several different culture stories.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So I wrote this, but it is the basic story of the free thought of several different cultures that have the Groot Sling in it.
Okay.
This animal is old as Earth. It was one of the first of creation. So basically, it was since day one.
Right. Isn't that like the Leviathan or something? What'd I do? What'd I do? Oh, no.
Shut up.
Sorry.
I'm actually mad at you.
You want to edit that out?
No.
All right.
They are best described as giant-scaled dragons with huge tusks and a trunk. They were created to be the most powerful of beasts, but the gods quickly realized their mistake.
Oh.
The Groot Sling terrorized the land and left piles of corpses that they did not eat, for they enjoyed the kill. Creating rivers of blood, carving channels of some modern-day rivers.
Hmm.
The Groot Sling were also great breeders and quickly took over lands that their parents had already wiped out all other forms of life. The gods, not wanting to see all of creation slaughtered by these powerful beasts, the gods gathered them up into a great herd. They cut them into pieces with great prejudice. So chopped them all up.
Right, yeah.
One small Groot Sling hid among the pile of corpses until the gods were not looking and snuck away and hid in the great hole away from the vengeful eyes of the gods. Now the gods, not wanting to waste these beast parts, they decided they would make two new powerful beasts to rule the land. They created out of these parts the elephant and the python. The last Groot Sling hid from the eyes of the gods and grew in size and became angry at the outside world, guarding its treasure from anyone who would dare to venture into the underground. Yeah.
Elephant and a python.
Yep.
Quite different.
So that's the basal creation myth of the Groot Sling.
Okay.
So Groot Sling were created, like you said, they were created by the gods or God, depending on which culture. Like I said, many cultures, combination right there, were created to show the power of that character. They were a show-off piece.
Okay.
Then they quickly realized they made a mistake. These creatures had great venom, power, prowess in hunting.
Yeah.
Were slaughtering everything. Hmm. They were killing all the other animals in creation, leaving great piles. They laid many eggs really rapidly. So the gods caught them all and killed them all with great prejudice. There's even some, depending on which culture you look into, some stories talking about young men going out and killing juvenile to baby Groot Sling to prove their prowess. Even a baby Groot Sling is the deadliest normal animal on the planet.
Right. Not even just right out the womb. It's number one.
If you get any drop of their venom on you, you will die.
Yeah.
Like there's no anti-venom. There's no cure for it. So the gods gathered them all up, killed them all, but not wanting to waste the pieces, they made together two different animals, the African elephant and then the rock pythons.
Which is a weird one of the two.
When you look at it, we'll talk about that more in depth here in a little bit.
Yeah.
They're the two kind of powerhouses of Africa. When you, where they want to look at it, rock pythons in the jungles, wetlands, water, like there's crocodiles and stuff like that too, but people are really scared of snakes and people are really scared of the power of elephants.
Yeah.
So it's kind of these two signifiers of really powerful beasts.
On other ends of that spectrum.
Yes.
When you remember the story, it's The Little Prince. I don't know. They came out with they made a movie of it or something, but it's a book. It's a French book. But in the very beginning, I'm trying to remember, it's off memory, but he sees a snake, but the snake had eaten an elephant and it had this weird shape that looked like a hat. I just thought it was a weird combo that they chose the snake and the elephant too, as well as the Groot Sling.
So depending on which culture you're talking about, when the baby got away, it could have been one baby, it could have been several babies. Mm-hmm. Because we're going to talk about the Wonder Hole, which is like a hole in Africa.
Like Mel's Hole?
Yeah. Yeah, actually, yes. Diamond Hole and the Bottomless Pit in Africa. Several other places are also said to have Groot Sling.
Mm-hmm.
Groot Slings do not come out of the caves, the holes, or out of the water.
Ooh.
That's a big part of this. Because they say that if they get anywhere where the gods can see them, the gods will hunt them down.
Yep, and strike them down. Yes. Smite them.
So when we start talking about the Bottomless Pit and the Wonder Hole later, which we have some stories about, there's a reason the Groot Sling will not chase you outside of these areas. Because it can't leave.
Ooh, okay.
There's not some magical force keeping down there. It's smart enough to know that if it leaves, it's dead.
Dead, yeah.
But yeah, so hiding among the pile of corpses until the gods weren't looking, and then snuck away, and this was a baby. So the way it kind of talks about is some of the Greek and Mediterranean legends of Basilisk it reminds me of too.
Okay.
Which they were said, they weren't big. Like, original basilisk legends, they were not big. They were normal snake-sized. But you could tell a basilisk has been there because everything is dead and the ground is starting to die.
Hmm.
Okay. They're, constantly, extruding venom. Like, their venom is so potent.
Sounds radioactive.
In a way, you could think of it like that. And then they would say, if you've seen one baby basilisk, you have to kill it immediately because there's, they'll take over an area really fast.
It's like kudzu.
Yeah. So the Groot Sling is a very similar legend, except they're humongous.
Okay.
Some cultures say they're around 60 to 70 feet long, big reptilian, scaly elephant creatures, very dragon-esque in a way. They don't look like a typical European dragon, but big scaled, long tail, big headed monsters.
Kind of like that video of it was fake, but that video of that, it was like a worm underground.
Yeah, a cave worm.
Yeah,
I think that's actually what it's called on YouTube because we showed it, I think.
Yeah, we showed it.
Yeah.
But that was a fake.
It's CGI.
That one was fake, yeah.
But it's a company that does a couple of really. Oh,
sorry.
Snuck up on me, that sneeze. That came out of nowhere. It's like a Groot Sling flew in there.
So that's kind of one thing that they argue about is whether it's many Groot Sling or one Groot Sling got away. Or several Groot Sling got away.
Okay.
If they're still breeding or not, most cultures agree that no, it's whatever got away from the original because they can't get to each other to breed even if there are multiple ones.
Because they're all underground.
Yeah, so that's why they're humongous, is they've been growing since creation.
Okay.
And they get really angry. They're angry that they're trapped. They're angry at the gods for killing off their kind. They're really, really angry, but they also hoard treasure. We'll talk about these holes are said to be like literally full of diamonds and emeralds and all kinds of stuff.
Kind of like on Lord of the Rings. Was that Hobbit? It was the Hobbit.
The Hobbit. Smaug.
Yeah, the dragon that guarded the...
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's a European dragon legend thing as well.
Yeah.
And even some Indo-Pacific and Chinese legends of their versions of dragons are also said to hoard treasures. They don't have to be necessarily gold.
Gold, right, right.
But it's whatever the culture, I guess, views as a treasure.
Huh. I wonder if that's just like a... Because that's a worldwide almost phenomena.
It is. No, it's
but I
a
wonder...
deep part of... If you want to say this is a dragon, a deep part of dragon lore.
Yeah.
Is something with that, whatever humans deem valuable. Hmm. And for the Groot Slayings aspect, they go more into why the Groot Slaying hates people. It's because people were kind of the thing to take over after the Groot Slaying.
Okay.
So the gods wiped out all the Groot Slaying because they were taking over the Earth. Then people went ahead and took over the Earth.
Oh, so like...
So the Groot Slayings...
Like Nephilim.
Yeah.
Same difference.
Very hateful.
Yes. Towards, okay. Because they were the ones like, this is ours, mm-hmm. and then God made man.
Yeah. So very hateful towards people.
Okay. I got a good grasp on their
and then you could see, like, state. Depending on the culture or how they draw them, they can be anything from, like, modern day, a lot of them are kind of goofy, to where it's like a big snake with an elephant's head.
Okay.
They are supposed to be a very good combination of both those creatures.
Okay.
It's not like the body of a snake with an elephant's head.
Right.
It's a very good matching of both animals. To produce this.
Any chance it may look like a giant, like a siren?
No.
Oh, okay. Just no. So I'd throw that out there.
Freaky Fauna Friday this week.
Yeah.
It's at the end of the week, so you did it backwards. But
well, you know, it's something foreshadowing.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of my little creation story. But we're going to just talk about the basics of the Groot Slaying. The Groot Slaying is said to be a huge serpent-like creature that dwells in the caves known as the Wonder Hole and or the Bottomless Pit, located in Richardsville.
Okay.
Which is said to connect to the sea, which is around 40 miles away. So it's a unique hole. It's full of water.
Yeah, okay.
You can go visit it right now and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
It's a known place.
This one, which one is this one? Which hole? Is this the
Wonder
Hole?
It's Wonder Hole / Bottomless Pit.
Oh, it's the same thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It depends on, you know, whatever you want to call it.
Right, okay.
The cave sometimes described as being connected to the Orange River. By a natural pipeline through which the diamonds are gradually funneled into the current.
Oh.
So the Orange River is a famous place for finding big diamonds.
They wash out into it.
They don't know where they come from.
Yeah.
They've done sand mining and stuff like that. So they think they're in this cave, and every once in a while, they make their way into the river.
Groot Slaying.
The diamonds.
The diamonds do. Okay.
The diamonds do.
Maybe the Groot Slayings are knocking them loose.
Could be. The Groot Slaying does not want to lose the diamonds.
Oh, okay.
Does not. The cave projects directly downward for 60 feet until a steep incline, which the secondary passage branches off. So this is like a straight down hole.
Hole, yeah.
It's like Mel's hole. This is what tumor seals turn into if you let them get to adulthood.
They turn into?
Groot Slaying.
Groot Slaying, okay.
Don't let a tumor seal grow up. Eat them.
Mm.
Flavors of the forest.
Yeah, there you go.
So gradually, the cave projects directly downward. So the South African journalist and author Louis G. Green describes a wonder hole as being located 3 miles from the Orange River near Anafostafia Springs. And the native folklore describes two white men as descending into the cave to retrieve stones that sparkled like fire. We're going to assume they mean sapphires.
Sapphires?
Mm-hmm.
Aren't sapphires blue?
Oh, maybe I'm...
Like opals, maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. Some gem. Some precious gem.
Basically, yes. A precious gem, yeah.
A secondary exploration of the cave only found bat guano, or Groot Slaying poop. Another account describes only a person entering the wonder hole and returning. And this was a prospector who used a cable winch to descend into the cave until he reached the ledge. There he saw tunnels leading further in and smelled a strong scent of sulfur. He dropped an electronic torch, aka a flashlight here in the United States. When bats flew towards him, he pulled back. He did not descend into the cave again. Yeah.
It's like a scary scene out of a movie, you know?
Bats
come flying out of the cave.
A bat's in a cave?
Yeah. Just like...
Didn't expect bats?
Yeah. It's one of those scary movie cave trope.
A large pool beneath King George's contract at Abergiddes Falls is also said to be a lair of a Groot Slaying, and is a source of diamonds. Here is a creature is reputed to coil around a great hoard of gold and diamonds and other gems, According to this version of the story reported by the Bushman, the Groot Sling is older than the world and protects its treasure for eternity. Another form of this myth states the Groot Sling is a spirit tasked with guarding the cavern of treasure from treasure seekers, and the prevalence and the markings of the overpowered sense of evil when you get too close to the Groot Sling's lair. So like I said, there are many, many different cultures and legends with the Groot Sling.
Yeah.
I kind of made a compiling. In the glamour of prospecting, the South African gold prospector F.C. Connell describes, and we're going to actually talk more about him later, I believe, describes the Groot Sling, he has it as separate words, as a large snake that is said to live in the large rocks in the middle of the Orange River. It takes cattle from the riverbanks. Believe in the creature is described as ubiquitous among the local. Now, the Kiahoi tribes. I have a little pronunciation. I believe that's how you say it.
Okay, Kiahoi.
Kiahoi tribes. And some white settlers in the area who generally greatly fear the serpent. While searching for the treasure in Rustenburg, South Africa in 1917, an English businessman, Peter Grayson, disappeared after members of his party were attacked and injured by lions, prompting rumors they were killed by Groot Sling. We're going to talk about that story again later, too.
Okay.
So that's kind of your basic intro to the Groot Sling. Any questions so far? What are your thoughts? What are your questions? What do you need, baby girl?
Well, I'm trying to think of a... there's a lot of cryptid creatures, I guess, or just creatures in general that could be responsible for some of these things. That last one just sounded like some sort of alligator or something, or croc living in the river. I don't know.
Could be.
There's something. I don't know. It just could be, yeah.
But no, this constant, one of the things is constant with all the cultures that talk about this legend with the Groot Sling, is the hoarding of gold or the guarding, or not gold, the hoarding of treasure or the guarding of treasure.
Right, yeah.
It can be gold, it could be diamonds.
Anything.
Both of these rivers have diamond mines in them.
Okay.
So there are diamonds there. So I don't know if it's this generalized thought that there has to be a motherload of diamonds, and why nobody's found it is because there's a monster guarding it, or whatever. But it's just like we've already kind of talked about. It's very striking with dragon legends from around the world and this hoarding of treasure.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, you like it so far?
Yeah, yeah.
Would you wrestle one?
A Groot Sling? I think I could take it.
50 feet? They stand like 15 feet tall?
Yeah, just one good swift punch from me, though.
Yeah,
it's like you kicking a Dover demon.
So we're actually going to take our ad break a little early because we're about to come back into sightings. Are you excited?
Excited for sightings.
You know, in tribute of the Wonder Hole, let's listen about Mel's Hole.
Hey, we're down here at Mel's Hole, and Justin? Justin? Where'd you go?
Help! I'm falling down the hole!
You fell down Mel's hole?
Yes, I keep falling. And I think I'm going to be falling for a really, really long time.
Oh, no. How long till I... You have enough time for me to get a rescue crew?
I think I do, but I'm really hungry, and I found a dead tumor seal as I was falling. But it looks absolutely disgusting. Do you have anything to help?
I think I have just the thing. Here. Let me toss down a couple of bottles of Flavors of the Forest Bigfoot Breath.
Really, really chuck them so they catch up.
Here it comes, one. And two.
Well, I guess I'm going to have to eat this tumor seal now with Flavors of the Forest. Where could the other people get this amazing product to cook their own tumor seal?
You can get this wonderful, amazing, tasty product at flavorsforest.com/corn. Add it to anything and it will make your food taste delicious.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
Oh, I love Flavors of the Forest.
You always talk way too fast right after.
Do I?
Yes.
They're just so excited.
It's hard to fit the other ads in right after.
No. I'm just right. Ready.
Sightings. So while it seems to be nothing more than mere myth or folklore on the surface, there are actually a few sightings of this beast over the centuries that have casted wonder on whether it actually exists or not. So this is definitely like, first when you hear about it, seems very either folklore-ish or, you know, myth-ish, whatever you want to say.
Okay.
People have seen this thing.
Okay.
So I couldn't, well, when we talk about modern day stuff, it's very hard to decide. You've heard in the dinosaur episode from the finale, there's a lot of African cryptids, tons and tons of them. Like we talked about with some of those is that the name may change.
Depending on the region?
The region. But it's very, very similar things across, you know, big spans of Africa. And Africa is a humongous continent.
Right.
With tons and tons of different cultures, tons and tons of different peoples. So it's very hard to kind of really decipher what's a Groot slang and what's something else that may be similar.
Kind of like the Bunyip.
Like the Bunyip in Australia.
Yeah.
But like when we talked about like the African, the elephant killer in Africa in the season finale.
Right, yep.
You know, that carried across. There was other cryptids in the southern part of the continent that matched the same description.
Right, yeah.
So even just, you know, so there's some of that with this.
Okay.
So why it seems like nothing, you know, exists. In 1867, explorer Hans Spur spotted an enormous black snake-like creature, nearly 100 feet long, making its way through the Orange River near Avil North, East Cape Province. There was another account from 1899 in which a merchant named G. A. Kenner was crossing the Orange River near Uppington Town, near North Cape Province, when an 8 to 10 foot head of a gigantic serpent-like beast crashed up from underneath the waves near the boat.
Yeah, that's not good.
First, he thought it was, he thought it was a hippo coming at the boat because he kind of seen it moving towards him.
But it was just a head.
The head was the size of a hippo.
Right, yeah. Just the head.
Just the head.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
Yeah, so very, very big head.
Yeah. Hippo-sized.
Hippo-sized head. Some very interesting sightings were made by South African adventurer and prospector Lieutenant Fred C. Cornell. Couldn't say the name.
There you go. You got it out, though.
Who had the first experience in the bush with a monster in 1910 during an expedition to Aberbellisville in North Cape Province. On the occasion, an American explorer named Kamer came back to camp in a terrified panic, claimed to have seen a serpent lift itself 12 feet out of the water and began to bathe in a nearby pool. So, before I continue, the serpent word is, like we've talked about in the show many a time, does not necessarily mean snake.
Right.
In Europe, dragons are serpents.
Right.
They don't look like snakes. They're reptilian-esque, So I just want to make that very clear, is that I think some people in modern day are confusing the word serpent with snake.
Right.
Serpent is reptilian beast.
Reptilian, what would you say, long, slender beast?
Well, long is fine, but you know, it's more that reptilian-like beast.
Okay.
Because some serpents that were drawn in European folklore for the word do not look anything like snakes.
Okay.
But I just wanted to say that. But I think that's confusing some people in modern day. The second sighting would happen in 1920 when Cornell would write about this of the unwieldy titled book. I love it when these books have just giant names. The Glamour of Prospecting, Wanderings of the South African Prospector in Search for Copper, Gold, Emeralds, and Diamonds. And this is what he would write.
That's the name of the book?
Yeah.
It's like one of our titles sometimes when we really go in.
Yeah, well, sometimes we do it on purpose because it's funny.
I know.
Anyways, it was dark when he floundered out of it, and we'd steered straight for the wide, thickest of willows, made a big fire, and we were only too glad to turn in. It seemed an excitement in camp, with wood, water, and shelter from the cold wind. But it was with plains that the boys were uneasy. They were crouched close to our fire instead of building one apart from us as they usually did. And he's talking about the native peoples that they hired for this expedition.
Okay.
So normally they kind of go off and have their own little camp when they camp down for the night.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, there was something uneasy with the guys, the boys, as he called them.
Mm-hmm.
They were staying with our fire and like were right next to us,
yeah.
Which I haven't done the whole trip.
Yeah.
For some food, Isaac suggested they might perhaps trek a little further in, and this coming after the most ambitious day was drastically strange. We asked him why, and after beating around the bush for a bit, he told us in the middle of the river, the exact opposite of where we were camped, was a big rock in which a huge snake, the root sling, had its home. It was not safe for us and our horses. So before I continue, basically Isaac, one of the guides, was saying, why don't we move away from the river? Let's camp further inland. And they haven't done this the whole trip. They camp like right on the river.
Right.
Because crocodiles and hippos are probably less scary than leopards and lions.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Safer by the river relatively. Yeah.
Just build it off the ground. Big cats can climb.
Right, exactly, yeah.
So this is the first time he's like, let's go in. You know, the guys are acting strange. So right across the river is this humongous rock, or rock outcrop, as it were, that he said was the home of the Groot Sling. We had long heard of this mighty snake. Many reputable Hottentots, which is a tribe, and a few white men have claimed to have seen it. Many others have seen a huge spur in the sand or mud, over a foot and a half wide. It is believed to take cattle from the banks, and the natives fear it in its mighty will. There are no crocodiles in the Orange, and besides, there are never any traces of feet in the spurs. In a remarkable fact that the Hottentot name for the huge python, or whatever it may have been, was Kemen, which is very like the eastern name for an alligator or crocodile. Anyhow, we were too far tired to care for this mighty snake, and of course we stayed where we were, the only thing to annoy us being the huge, long-legged tarantulas that kept running incredibly swiftly into the fire, the neighbors sizzle, sperming, and smell unpleasantly. So I'll go over this paragraph again before we move on.
Yeah. That ends with suicide spiders.
So yeah, spiders running into the fire all night and they smell horrible. I don't know if the spiders like were just attracted to the fire or they were chasing bugs into the fire.
It could be either way.
Yeah, but yeah. So they're near the spot. Giant snakes, something like that, has been taking cattle. There's apparently no crocodiles in the Orange River. So they're like, they would see these. What a spur is a slide mark.
Okay.
On the river.
I was going to ask you that, yeah.
So they see these massive slide marks. So it's over a foot and a half wide, which is really big for a crocodile.
Right.
They get bigger than that, obviously. They get like 4 foot wide, but, you know, it's still a big crocodile. But there's no leg marks with the mud, so it's fully sliding like a big snake.
Okay.
But the guys are like, we're going to ignore the people that live here. We're too tired to move camp inland. Let's just not care about this massive monster.
We'll worry about it tomorrow.
Across the river.
Deal with it tomorrow.
We'll just watch these trenches explode.
That would be kind of entertaining.
So, in the morning, we found that the river was long, wide, and still, and apparently a very deep stretch of water, and that a big rock rose from the center as its guides had said. It appeared to be that of granite, and it was written in half by a big cleft. The sheer mud banks on the river should have shown the traces of something coming in and out of the water, but we found no spur. So we made some use of dynamite cartridges with fuse and detonators and flung them out as far as we could and stood by as the arousal had hardly, in the case of the Grootsling, wasn't home in an object. The dynamite made a great upheaval, but no snake manifested. Only a few small spurrings and a barbel flopped around in the muddy water.
Not the barbel.
So they see something. Basically, a big rock in the center of this outcrop had been busted from the previous night.
Like split in half,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And you could see mud on it, like a big monster had gone over it.
Okay.
So they're like, oh, the Grootsling's living down there. We have dynamite.
Let's throw some dynamite down there. Yeah.
So,
and they didn't know Grootsling.
A barbel's a fish, by the way.
Right, yes. A barbel steed, right? Isn't that a fish?
Maybe.
I learned that from Animal Crossing.
Yeah. Well, then probably. Yeah. They actually have, most of the names are accurate. So, let me continue. So, nothing came out of the muddy water. Then I saw something moving in the crack in the rock and let dive with my rifle. I was in a hurry and then heard my bullets hit the landscape somewhere in the German territory. But Rawson had seen movement too, and he emphasized with emptying his magazine into the crack with undue loss of time. When we finished the very flushed and ignorant of old wild duck spurtings out of the crack, we went away on hunt and quacking most devilishly. No luck again for big game shooting.
So they didn't get it.
No, so they see something moving on one of the rocks after they dynamite.
They fired at it.
It was cave ducks.
Oh, no.
So they started just unleashing on. So there in Africa, there are all these ducks that actually live underground. They live in warthog holes and like little caves and stuff like that.
Wow.
They don't dig holes.
They occupy
holes.
They get along with the Salcata, I bet.
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
Different part of Africa, but.
Oh, okay. But if they did hang out.
Because, you know, I don't think there's many waterfowl in the Sahara.
That's probably true. There's no reason to really stop unless you're seeing your old buddy, Salcata.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, you heard correctly. Cornell, who apparently actually attempted to go on and use dynamite to kill the creature without success, unless this is success by you mean tearing a new hole in the river. Interestingly, in 1917, there was a story of a prospector who launched an expedition to the cave by the name of Peter Grayson in search of diamonds, famously stating, "I am determined to return to England a very rich man or a dead man." Apparently, his team did not have a good time of it.
Oh, yeah.
Mainly that they were dying and turning back before they even got anywhere close to the cave. Grayson went on to forge ahead. It is said that they walked off towards the cave and went to never come out. The local lore said the Grootsling killed him.
Okay.
So his team was like dying of malaria, snake bites.
The Grootsling, though.
And he was like, and the rest of the team were like, we're done. We're not going in this cave.
Yeah.
And he went to the cave. The locals were like, he went in the cave. And he never came out.
The Grootsling got him.
The Grootsling got him.
And not the malaria, not any other sickness or poisoning. It was the Grootsling.
Just him. Grayson.
I'm just saying, they probably murdered him. They're like, we're done with this. He's like, no, we're going in the cave.
No, because they abandoned him.
That's what, yeah.
They didn't have to murder him. They just left.
Okay, that's like,
it's not like it was a colonel keeping him there.
I just imagine they're all like looking around each other. He's the last one left. The rest of his team's dead, just the guides. And he's like, we're going in the cave. They look at each other. One spear at him, and then they all walk away. Yeah, Grootsling got
just
him.
Pushed him in the cave. In years later, there was an interesting claim by a journalist, Lawrence G. Green, in the 1945 book, Where Men Still Dream, in which he recounts why the local tribes in the area refused to go anywhere near the pit where the Grootsling is said to dwell, all except one unnamed prospector who apparently made many follies into the cave looking for riches and said it was down there. Green would write this about the enigmatic man and the Grootsling in general. The cavern, they say, is connected to the sea 40 miles away. If you lean over the edge of the pit and listen carefully, there comes a deep boom, like surf of the distant shore. I know one tough prospector who took a winch and cable to the spot to explore the little wonders of the Wonder Hole. He is believed, the only man to ever attempt this feat. It is dark and extremely hot when his feet touch the ledge far below. The ragged circle of daylight seems small. Bats flew in his face. He dropped his electric torch before he hauled himself to the surface and observed the tunnel leading out of the shaft. There, he said, the smell of sulfur in the air, and he never did descend again. The great snake of the Orange River is something more than legend. Cornell described it in his books. Scores of other living men near the river were sent letters to newspapers declaring that they had seen the monster deep in the guts of the cave. Native stories that the snake had enormous diamonds for eye sockets, and that this strange and evil influence is felt for any who behold the creature. Many of the potential dismissed it. White eyewitnesses state that the snake is 40 feet long, leaving a track on the mud of banks that is over 3 feet wide. The spur was followed only by a party of prospectors for many miles before it disappeared into the river. The true probability of the existence of large pythons have been seen in the river from time to time, and their size seems very exaggerated. Pythons up to 25 feet in length have been shot. Their prowls of swallowing a buck whole are well known, but the native mind are remnants of that of the only great snake greatly feared. So I'll break it down for you. So the cavern is said to be connected to the sea. As far as I could find, I couldn't really find anybody doing actual test on
confirming
it.
Confirming it.
If it's salt water or whatever.
There's multiple of those around. Like there's that one around.
There's caves connected to seas. Now, it's not a weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when there's two big rivers, like literally on each side of this cave.
Yeah.
It seems more likely the water's coming from that.
Okay.
So, you know, it's whatever. But they say you can hear waves crashing in it. If it's 40 miles away, I don't know if you're hearing waves crashing in it.
Well, I don't know. I got a...
I've been 40 miles away from the beach.
Yeah, but I got a conch shell, like, you know, from the beach. Yeah. And I'm in Ohio, and I can still hear the ocean. That's more than 40 miles away.
So the only prospector ever brave enough to even go down there got to the main ledge. And if you look at pictures of this online, you can see what he's talking about. There's a ledge before you hit the water bottom. When he got to that ledge, he could look in and see there's caverns going off in every direction.
Wow.
Okay. And it smelled, reeked of sulfur, and that's when bats hit him in the face and he panicked. So they say, people that see this beast say that it has diamonds for eyes. I don't know if they mean they glow, they sparkle, they're huge, they're shiny, or they're actual diamonds.
I would imagine...
So when we talk about some reptiles like crocodiles and even some pythons, they actually have a scale over their eye.
That little protective...
Yeah, that's why they don't blink.
Right.
Some reptiles don't blink. But that's why snakes and crocodiles, crocodiles can fold their eyes in, but it's not for the purpose of blinking. But they have this like layer on. So I kind of wonder if this is a true reptile, if that's what they're seeing. This creature down these caves, it just has a massive one or a thick one.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like a diamond. It kind of that white, cloudy... You know, look.
Right, yeah.
And it could even be like crocodiles where they can pull it back and, you know, push it forward.
Yeah.
So when you see it and it has this protective layer on, it looks like it has giant white milky diamonds for eyes.
If it just catches your, what they call the electronic torch.
Yeah.
If they catch the electronic torch just right, it could look like diamonds.
And you could feel the evil from the beast emanating anywhere that it even got close to seeing it. Like they already said that people find the mud. He is a big believer that this is a python. Green is.
Okay.
He's a big pusher that these... He uses very colorful language. Keep my 1945.
Mm-hmm.
Very colorful language for the local people, saying that they're very ignorant, and they're just scared of their local big pythons.
Hmm.
The people that live with the pythons...
For years, centuries, I mean generations, mm-hmm. lifetimes.
Yeah.
So don't know.
Yeah, he's like, these just people are just seeing pythons in the cave and over-exaggerating their size because they're scared... They're dumb natives, essentially. Mm. And we've talked about that. We talked about that a lot with the dinosaur finale is there's a lot of explorers, quote unquote, that come to areas where people live.
Right.
And then they're like, look at these savages.
Right. Yeah. They don't know anything.
They don't. But they do. And you know what? I'm a guy that if the natives are like, yeah, there's a monster that lives in that cave. Guess what cave I'm not going in.
Exactly.
All right. Sightings and accounts went on. when in 1947, there was a report from John Cliff, a man who saw a black crocodile near the abandoned mine crater. And sightings have continued even more into modern times, with strange, very large snake-like tracks found near the river waters. There are numerous stories of people being chased off by large reptilian-like monsters down in these caves. So not just this big cave, but other local caves.
Uh-huh.
Locals have claimed that many people have gone missing in search for these riches. The pit swallows them up to never return. It certainly makes you wonder what might be behind all these stories. But yeah, so this last one in 1947 was like a huge black, almost furry crocodile.
Furry?
Like they said the back was almost like it was maned.
Hmm, like it had a... like algae or growth, maybe?
That could be, or something primitive, like some like primitive reptile, not primitive reptiles, but ancient reptiles, like pterosaurs, had a fur-like substance they grew.
It was just a beaver.
You guys talked about it with with Michael. The giant beaver croc?
Oh, yeah. You're right.
It was a Patreon episode.
Yeah.
In Europe.
Yeah.
So it's very similar to that. So... this was kind of our last where Groot Slaying sightings kind of die off. But when I said modern sightings, there are tons of the African, quote-unquote, dinosaur-like things
uh-huh.
that are kind of still seen in this area. Why the Groot Slaying may have died off is in the 70s, this area got industrial slave mining
okay.
for a while. So if anybody knows anything about these Africa, it's horrible. But some of these mines, whether they're slave or non-slave, and I don't know if they're slave or non-slave anymore. And by slave, I don't mean like they're these, like, how do you explain that? They're these mine communities where basically people are kind of forced to work there.
Indentured servants.
Indentured servants, that's the word.
Yes.
So the Groot Slaying may have died from poisoning. So everybody knows when they do these massive open pit mines for like deep earth minerals and like rubies and emeralds and diamonds, all kinds of toxins leak out of the earth. So there's a chance that this individual Groot Slaying may be dead from toxicity.
Okay.
Yeah. So what do you think so far of the Groot Slaying?
Well, it's got that fine balance of could be based in, you know, reality, like an actual creature, and folklore, like folklore of like warning of the dangers of, you know, areas like this, you know. It's kind of got a little bit of both, but... that furry black crocodile. So then you got your stories from the, like a lot of these are the white white explorers that.
Quote unquote.
Quote unquote, yeah, that know better than the natives. And then you got your natives.
Listen, everybody at home. If the natives are telling you something that lives there, it lives there.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
They live there. They know what a python. Anyways.
And they know how to deal with it because they still live there. They're still alive. Yeah. Yeah.
No, so ready to get to what the Groot Slaying could be?
Sure.
You sure?
I think so.
I have a lot for this one.
Okay.
Let's start with the basic, the one Green proposed.
Okay.
That the natives are just seeing giant snakes.
Okay.
But let's talk about this in two ways.
Yeah.
So the big snake is the Central African rock python, Python sebi. Species of large constrictor in the python family. They're native to Africa. This is one of the top 10 living species or species in the genre python. Africa's largest snake and one of the 8 largest snakes in the world. So they're up there with green anacondas, reticulated python, Burmese, and you know we're talking the South African rock python, Indian pythons and yellow anacondas, and Australia's scrub pythons.
Okay.
Are kind of the big, big snakes of the world.
Right.
So this is one of them. They get huge. They get huge, and they have been man-eaters. Specimens approach and exceed 6 meters, 20 feet length. There's argument of how big these pythons can get, depending on who you talk to. The Central African rock python is regarded as one of the longest snakes in the world. The snake is found in a variety of habitats from forests and deserts. They love sources of water, and they are especially fond of rock outcrops and caves.
Hmm. Very fitting.
But the snake becomes dormant during the dry season. The Central African rock python kills its prey by constricting and often eats animals, often the size of antelope a lot. But they've been known to eat crocodiles and people.
Okay.
Depending on how big the snake is.
Yeah.
They're egg-laying snakes. Unlike most snakes, though, the female does protect her nest and even sometimes her hatchlings, becoming entirely aggressive over her nesting site.
Uh-oh.
The snakes are widely feared in most regions. They are non-venomous and they rarely kill humans. The snake is not endangered in any way. They do face threats from habitat destruction and hunting. Some cultures in sub-Saharan Africa consider them a delicacy, which poses them a threat to those populations. Hmm. But yeah.
Can they rear up out of the water?
Not like any great deal.
Okay.
Yeah, snakes don't really, they don't have
lift, like, right?
Yeah. It's hard for them because they don't have fins or arms. So what we can do it is we're pushing ourselves up. They have the lateral motions.
Right, yeah.
They can do it a little bit, but not anything great.
Not like that one story account where it
was lifted. 12 foot out of the water?
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
So what do you think about the African rock python?
Well, it does fit some of the boxes. I mean,
the cave rock, out, you know, yeah. They're called rock pythons for a reason.
Exactly, yeah.
And they are very, very protective parents.
Mm-hmm.
The females get really big. During their nesting season, they will protect their nesting sites very aggressively.
Now, could this be, is this the root slang, or could it explain some sightings? Yeah, perhaps. It very well could. I mean, especially if you, one of these explorers, maybe, now the locals will probably know the difference. They'll know, like, oh, that's just the python as opposed to the root slang. But then you got some yoker that's from, you know, Northern Europe, and he's like, hey, no, this is just a python. All these stories are just this big python.
So, root slang, some cultures roughly translate to great snake or great serpent. Mm-hmm. I don't know who you're talking to. What if it's not the central rock python? It's a big cousin.
Ugh.
Let's talk about the Giganotus jarbratian, an enormous prehistoric snake from Africa.
Okay, prehistoric?
Yeah. The reticulated python, you know, is, depending on who you talk to, the current record for longest snake. But it was still much smaller than the Gigarophius, I think is how you pronounce it. The Gigarophius is a massive prehistoric snake from the Eocene epoch, estimated to be 36 to 40 feet in length.
Uh-oh, that fits that range.
It lived in what's now northern Africa and is probably one of the largest snakes to ever exist. It's even surpassed modern-day anacondas and pythons in size by a great deal. Boswell even suggests it coexisted with large prehistoric animals, potentially preying on ancient crocodiles and other sizable reptiles.
Hmm.
There's some evidence in areas that they were found were completely absent from crocodiles because of this predation.
So it was a prehistoric megafauna snake.
What did I just say?
That it's preying on the people?
Crocodiles were absent from the areas they inhabited.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
The Orange River area
has no
crocodiles.
Yes, at all.
Because it loved eating them so much. Oh. So this massive snake, during the Eocene epoch, about 26 million years after the dinosaurs ruled Earth. It's a true giant of its time, barely 36 feet in length, residing in ancient ecosystems in northern Africa, and overshadowed by modern-day relics of the anaconda in size, making it one of the biggest snakes to ever exist. So there's people arguing that this is bigger than Titanoboa.
Right, which those were the big, fat, like,
huge snakes.
They
were definitely
snakes. Heavier. Yeah.
It's like, well, anacondas versus pythons.
Okay.
Anacondas are boas. Pythons are pythons.
Gotcha.
So anacondas are the heaviest snake in the world.
The even thick, though
they
thick
do
boys.
Get long.
Yeah.
But yeah. So
they get down with the thickness.
They dwelt anywhere from, like, Egypt, Africa, northern, you know, 40 million years ago. They were discovered in western deserts, including parts of the spiral column and jaw fragments have been found all over the northern Africa. Due to its considerable length, it is known as the longest prehistoric snake, surpassing any day modern snake. Guess how wide it would have been?
3 to 4 feet.
3.5 feet wide.
I only guessed that because what'd you call them? The scoop marks?
What? Spur.
Spur marks, yeah.
Scoop turtles. We call them drag marks here, or slide marks.
Okay. Spur marks, though, over. Okay.
Yeah, so there's people argue of how long ago this snake went extinct. Snakes don't fossilize really well.
Right.
So there's just not a lot of evidence. Some people say 12 million, some people say 4 million years ago, so on and so forth.
And after our five season finale, you know, those numbers could all just be all jacked up.
Yes.
They might be a lot sooner.
I didn't do that on purpose, but I'm so glad we're doing this right after that.
Yeah.
Because there's so much that ties in.
Yeah, it's a through line thing with all this stuff. Yeah. if the timeline's off,
4 million years is nothing. I don't care. When we did our Lazarus taxa episode, you all should know 4 million years in conventional time scale is nothing,
right,
for species to disappear off the fossil record.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we don't have a good reason why they went extinct, because their prey sources didn't go extinct, and there were suitable habitats basically bordering. Like, habitats kind of move.
Right.
You know, so you follow it. We talked about that with mole salamanders in North America. We live, like, oxalates live in the desert now. The mole salamanders didn't go extinct that were living there. They just moved with the temperate areas.
Right.
Well, it was temperate there for a while.
Right.
And then they just kept following the temperate line.
Until it was...
So that's what these guys should have done that. Their prey sources didn't disappear.
Right, yeah.
Anyways, interesting thing. What do you think? Could it be... What is your percentage for a rock python?
That was the first one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it could be a small sliver.
Okay.
About four.
Okay. Gigotherius.
Now, I like this. I like this idea. This is a good one.
This could be one of the last populations.
Yeah.
If they're like supersized rock pythons, for example, they may love cave life.
Right.
It may be great.
Never come out.
Maybe it's connected to the rivers.
Oh, they got abundant food source forever.
Anacondas. We look at supersized snakes today. Anacondas are almost fully aquatic adults.
Uh-huh.
They can go on land, but they're much more comfortable in the water because it supports their body weight.
The buoyancy.
Yeah. So let's say they're normal, the juveniles of these giant snakes look really a lot like rock pythons.
Yeah.
So people just think they're catching weird looking rock pythons.
Right, yeah.
A juvenile up to 20 something feet long, you're still going to think it's a rock python.
Right.
Because they live there.
Until you get this 6 to 8 foot tall head.
So what if the mega adults are living in the river systems, not really coming onto land?
Like the underwater river systems, like where the two rivers...
They're living in the rivers and in the cave systems.
Within the rivers.
Yes.
The underground rivers.
I think this could be a big chunk of it.
I think so too. Okay. I like this one because it fits all the measurements, all the tangible evidence we have.
When I started doing the research, it's very close to what everybody was describing.
Yeah.
But... It also speaks to locals, because locals know it's not a rock python.
Right, yeah. They know their differences.
You can be like, we know what a rock python is, bud.
It's different.
That's not a rock python.
Right. Yeah. Now, I always want to jump into, like, the Daryl voice when he imitates other people. Oh. Hey, this is a rock python. I don't know.
All right. So let's talk about the next thing I kind of have for you. Is a warning of dangerous snakes that like to live in rocks in caves. Africa's full of some of the most deadliest snakes in the world. And this could be what we kind of talked about, stories to keep kids away from these areas that you just like to hang out. You know, there's actually snakes with horns in Africa. So this is a snake with tusk coming out of its face.
Yeah.
But what if it's kind of an analogy for these snakes with horns?
Mm.
We're going to talk about two. We have literal horned vipers or tusked vipers in Africa and the Gaboon viper.
Oh, okay.
Which is a really big, fat slug snake.
I think we've... Well, I love about
Gaboon
this.
Vipers. They're one of the prettiest snakes on the planet. They have like crocheted patterns with multiple colors on their back. Very deadly, not aggressive.
Okay.
Don't mess with me. Don't step on me.
Yeah.
They don't rattle. You know, they're not rattlesnakes. The Gaboon viper is the largest viper in Africa by a long shot. The coloration and broad head, which mimics that of fallen leaves, camouflage it among leaf litter and forest and rocky habitats perfectly. They're invisible.
Right.
When you see them in captivity, because they're gorgeous, and then you put them in like gray leaves, and they disappear.
Really?
You're like, they have blue, red, yellow, and green on them.
Yeah.
And you're like, where does it go?
Yeah. But somehow it does. It blends right in.
These are snakes are known to have a very calm nature and extremely rare to bite humans unless very pressed. The Gaboon viper's coloration and combination of its light and dark colors, pinks, purples, greens, and diamond-shaped stripes along its back. The light and dark lines radiate among the small of its eyes. They have such a complex pattern, it confuses animals' eyes. So the animal's eyes just choose not to take in the information. It's too much.
Hmm.
It's like the standing out so much, you're hidden.
Yeah, it's like a mind hack.
It is. It's a mind hack.
Yeah.
And these snakes are, I want to put, they're very, you know, they're potent venom. Very, very docile.
Yeah.
Yeah, as far as venomous snake keepers in the U.S., this is a fan favorite because they're huge.
And they don't.
They're very docile for venomous snakes.
Non-threatening.
For snakes in general.
Yeah.
They're big, slow animals. Kind of. They're not slow. I take that back. They look slow.
Oh, okay.
Gaboon vipers are the largest viper in Africa, weighing more than 45 pounds, reaching lengths of well over 6 feet. The largest individual's head was 6 inches across.
That's pretty big for a snake.
It's about the length of your hand across.
Right, yeah.
These are venomous. These vipers live in rainforest wetlands of Central Africa to Western Africa. They are terrestrial and can be found anywhere in the forest floor and rock outcrops. The vipers live up to 20 years old. They mostly are eating medium-sized mammals and birds. So, cool fact. So, here's your freaky fauna fact. They have the fastest strike of any snake on the planet.
Wow.
I've seen mixed numbers. So, I can give you a couple numbers. I don't know the accuracy. And these are both accredited institutions that kind of push these numbers.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest number I found was about 240 miles an hour.
What?
Most time when they strike, people don't see it.
Yeah, that's pretty dang fast.
So, they look fat. It's muscle.
Yeah.
They are one big muscle.
Ball of muscle.
And these aren't like a slithery snake. They actually crawl. They look like a millipede like a walking.
Okay.
So they have their bottom scales that are real muscular, but they just scoot them each individually. They don't slither. So when you see them going, they're really fun to watch. They look like such a goofy, colorful snake, but they have these two big horns coming off their face.
Interesting.
So these are tusk snakes.
Yeah.
So the idea behind this is they make the Groot sling. We've talked about it in the show. Folklore often takes a real life danger.
Right.
Like these venomous snakes. But if you tell kids that it's a venomous snake, stay away from it, what are they going to do? They're going to go play with that snake.
Oh, yeah.
You got to touch it. You make the big river monster. And it could be also warning against the dangers of caves and the dangers of big rivers.
Right.
In general. So you make this collaboration monster to keep kids specifically away from these areas.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at the Wonder Hole, it is straight down. And it's a shaft that if you fall in, you're dead.
I have to imagine. There's got to be like currents kind of under there too. If there's water flow or
anything.
You're
hitting rocks the whole way down.
Yeah.
By the time you get to the bottom, you've been dead a while. So I don't know. What do you think about this one?
As far as being like...
The Groot sling.
Oh, the snake? I think they could use it maybe as inspiration, maybe in some cases, but I don't think in general it's not nearly big enough to be like, unless it's like a baby Groot sling, like very, very
but like baby. Like I said, in folklore, you know, they exaggerate and stuff. They make a creature specifically.
Right.
And by the time it gets to modern day, everybody's forgotten that.
Right, right. You
know, that part.
But I mean, if all these... If even some of these accounts are true with her seeing the spur marks, you know.
Yeah.
It just doesn't fit the mold. Yeah.
This next one, I do not agree with.
Okay.
But I seen it posted out there. And like I said, you know, you guys know me. I try to include all options, even if I can't see it. Mis-ID'd monitor lizards.
Okay.
So the Nile monitor in Africa, and this is not near the, you know, the same area, Botswana, you know. They are located all over Africa, though. They're huge monitor lizards. They're least concerned. They're very common. They're very, very intelligent, apt predators. They're thinkers. They're huge, but by monitor lizard standard, I think they get up to like 8 feet long. I don't know. People said that this was the Groot sling.
Yeah.
And that people were talking about, because they love caves too, but they go into search for snakes and eggs and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. That's all I have for that one. I mean, it doesn't really, to me, fit what it looks like.
No, I don't think so. I'm with you on that.
Fits what the behaviors.
I just don't. Yeah, I don't. Lizard? Nah, I'm going to rule that out.
And I looked. Africa doesn't really have, as far as the fossil record is concerned, a really big monitor lizard. They've had other things kind of take those niches. When we talk about, like, well, Africa had Megalania.
Right.
Or not Africa. Australia had Megalania.
On the northern and southern end.
Everywhere, but they were in the outback too.
They were.
Yeah, not as nice. They didn't go as often, but they were there.
I think the most recent sightings, I guess.
Oh, you're talking about sightings?
Yeah,
I'm talking about when they just existed.
Oh, the full on folk.
They were there everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like they lived the whole continent.
Right. Yeah.
All right. My next one for you.
Is this the one I ruined earlier?
No, that's later.
Okay.
That just come up.
Okay.
No, elephants.
Just elephants.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about it. I think it might have been the season finale.
It was. So, elephants in Africa do inhabit cave systems.
Yeah.
So, the salt mining elephants of Mount Elon, I believe is how it's pronounced. Basically, these large herbivores, such as elephants, seek out mineral deposits, such as rocks and soil, to supplement their dietary intake of sodium, which this mineral is not obtained in adequate quantities of woody plants or natural water the elephants consume. So it is not uncommon to find elephants devouring soil and licking rocks at high sodium content. a special place in Mount Elon or whatever, National Park, in the Kenya-Uganda border, elephants have taken to an activity of steeping further. They have learned to quarry sodium-rich rocks off of a 25-million-year-old extinct volcano. These elephants will go... It's just crazy to me. These caves are quite voluminous, obviously. They're up to 150 meters long, 60 meters wide in some of the rooms, and 10 meters high. If you look up the pictures of the elephants in the cave, you're like, huh, there's elephants in the cave, until you realize how big the cave is.
Yeah, massive.
So I don't know. Why I put this in here is how these caves work is they're volcano calderas, essentially.
Okay.
They're sideways caves.
Right.
They're made from lava tubes and stuff like that.
Okay.
I had the thought that what if from the top of the Wonder Hole, somewhere, shape, or form, there is... Sorry.
A sideways connecting...
Yes, where you can't see.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening is that elephants are coming into the cave from 4 or 5 miles away. They're getting in there and they're eating the rocks down there. You're looking in 100 meters down. You will see this humongous thing moving around in these caves. So from the outside looking in, you see the biggest animal, land animal on the planet.
Right.
Down in a bunch of them.
Down in a hole.
You'll see pieces of them from distance.
Tusks.
So I kind of wonder if that's what happens. And that kind of started to spur the legends of this. And that I don't know. It's a thought.
Who knows?
Anything could be possible.
Right.
Now, so what do you think of this one? Elephants in caves.
Well, we know they're there.
And this happens in Africa.
Yeah, we know they're there. I mean, the only way to confirm or deny that one is checking out, mapping that cave system, see if it does connect. That would be interesting to know.
Yeah. All right, next one. Living dinosaurs.
Bum, bum, bum.
We did 8.5 hours on this. We're not going to go into any great detail. Living dinosaurs. No, but no, in all seriousness, that Africa's full of, obviously, of what appears to be living supersized reptiles.
Right, yeah.
Reptile-like creatures.
I was just prehistoric, maybe, creatures. Yes.
So what if this is a hang-on from even the dinosaurs? And this may be the tip of a massive cavern system, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But what if these are Africa's living dinosaurs? And they may... I don't personally believe they're there anymore. I do believe the Groot Slaying was a real thing. I do think the mining and stuff in the area may have...
Non-believer.
Well, I believe they were real.
You mean Elon Musk's, like, child slavery mines?
Shh.
Oh.
His dad lives 12 miles away.
Oh, okay.
I really don't know. I should have looked.
It's probably not far.
I have no idea. Anyways, though, what if this could be a living dinosaur that's always talked about? Africa's got a rich history of living dinosaur-like creatures everywhere.
Well, you have a living dinosaur or living prehistoric creature from that era, that epoch.
Yep. Next one is Casey Crave critters.
Okay.
This is a fun one. Hollow Earth creatures.
I gotcha.
This is one of the Hollow Earth openings. We always talk about these Hollow Earth openings like literally being like pits into the Hollow Earth.
Right.
The Wonder Hole is like a straight pit.
Shaft right down to it.
Yeah. So what if this is an opening to one of these areas? And some of them talk about like when Bird, if you want to believe Admiral Bird, crossed in, he said there were massive 100-foot-long elephant-like creatures.
He said that?
Yes. He thought they were like mammoths, but they're not mammoths.
Wow.
So this is 100-foot-long, depending on who you talk to, elephant-like creatures living in this straight-down hole.
He may have really went to inner Earth and saw a Groot Slaying.
Well, the Antarctic Groot Slayings.
Well, they're much more docile.
They are.
Friendly.
Yeah. But no, so... He talked about, like, seriously seeing these massive creatures, like, the second he got into, flipped over. So, I don't know. I believe in the Hollow Earth as much as humongous, maybe even continent-sized openings.
Right, cavities
in the Earth's mantle.
Yeah.
Or crust or whatever you want. Whatever. I don't know how deep it goes.
Yeah. I mean, it's all speculation anyways. Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. But what do you think of that? That the Groot Slayings are just one of these examples of these creatures, like, on the edge of the Hollow Earth area.
I mean, we know we got so many cryptid accounts, like cryptid creatures, whatever you want to consider them. There, so many of them are around cave systems in general, and a lot of unexplained and weird creatures and animals. All, well, a lot of the time seem to be around cave openings and things like that. So something's going on down under the earth. Something is. There's a whole biosphere that's inhabits, appears to inhabit large creatures. So why, if they're here in America, creatures like that, I'm only going to imagine around the earth, especially Africa, there's going to be more. So yeah, that's got to be part of it.
All right. Next one for you. Extinct megafauna that aren't extinct. Yeah. Africa is home to a wide variety of supersized extinct fauna.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from stuff like Paraceratheriums that we talked about with the Mokele and Bembe episode.
Yeah.
You know, to all kinds of stuff from giant other giant prehistoric rhinos, elephants, hippo relatives. The place that still has many megafauna had many more megafauna.
Right, yeah.
So I'm going to talk to you about a giant snake elephant that used to live in Africa.
Okay.
The Platybelodon.
Platybelodon.
Yes.
Let me look this thing
up. It's called the flat spear elephant.
Okay.
So they are around 10 feet high, around 20 feet long, weighing about 6,000 pounds. They were the globe-trotting elephant.
Okay.
So they were in Europe, Asia, and all over Africa.
Oh, these are freaking weird looking.
I highly suggest. So they don't have a true trunk. They have an elongated face like a giant bill.
Almost like a hippo.
They're called hippo elephants.
Yeah, it's like its face almost like a hippo.
But it's flat like a duck bill.
Yeah, but it still has the nose like a taper.
Yes. So they travel all over the planet. Their ancestors are modern-day elephants. But they walked alongside modern-day elephants, mammoths, and mastodons for a really long time.
Wow.
The range of these hairy monsters took all over. The Platybelodons, these giant-odd-looking elephants, lived in Asia, Africa, and Europe during the Middle Miocene Epoch. This was about 15 million years. To most scientists agree, they went extinct between 4 and 3 million years ago.
Wow.
It's like we already talked about with the giant snake, not that long ago.
Yeah.
Known for its super elongated jaw, which ended in two tusk-like incisors that were sharp as shovels. These animals literally translate to flat or sharp tooth. They first discovered in the 1920s and remains a most endemic animal known for the Miocene Epoch. These guys were everywhere. They dominated the planet.
This is crazy. I've never heard of these before.
Different theories are put forward to explain the functions of these weird tusks and other aspects of these giant elephants' life. They're huge, too.
Okay.
I've seen some depictions, like some people don't put them as the right size. These were humongous animals.
When you say humongous, are you saying bigger than modern-day elephants or about the same size?
Longer. About the same height, but much longer.
But longer, okay.
They weren't as heavy, depending on who you talk to.
Okay.
Once again, extinct animals, a lot of guesswork.
Right, yeah.
In the same large barrel-shaped torso, sturdy pillar-like legs, and robust body of modern pachyderms, the part is different is the overall structure of the skull and facial features. This basically, long story short, points to a much more aquatic lifestyle.
Okay.
They think the top, this giant shovel-like bottom jaw.
Yeah.
They think instead of having a normal trunk, they had a giant flexible lid to that.
Okay.
So it was like one big, flat, wide trunk to cover it up. They think they were aggressively like digging into the ground.
Probably using that thing to scoop or stir up things on the ground.
They think they were aquatic, partially in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
That we don't know a lot about them. We figure they were very, very aggressive for
like
their
hippos?
Size class. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, we don't know a lot about these guys. I put them in here because they're very, very odd looking.
They are.
I don't know if it's actually a Platybelodon that's living in the cave systems below.
Yeah.
But all the water, it's just more to highlight the weird animals that lived in Africa for an extended period of times. Like we talked about in the end of the season finale, the water rhinos of Africa were literally giant armor-plated aquatic rhinos.
Right. Man, yeah, I've never heard of these. I've never seen any.
I'll try to post one on the Facebook page when this comes out.
Their skulls are just
highly known for being super aggressive, it seems like.
Yeah.
They have what seems to be other victims, other massive elephants of the time, getting murdered by these guys.
Okay. I don't know of any other animal. You might, but I don't know if like that has a body plan or a head shape with a tool, specialized tool like that.
ancient elephants were the freakiest group of land animals.
Yeah, well, apparently so.
I mean, you look at modern-day elephants, we kind of take them for granted with the super flexible, giant, strong trunk.
Right, yep.
And the giant teeth coming out of their face.
Yeah.
Many, many elephants were weirder than this.
Yeah.
This is just a highlight one.
Yeah, absolutely it is. This is very unique.
I got three left for you.
All right.
It's just a dragon.
Okay, leftover.
Large-scaled, venomous, hateful caves with hoarding treasure. This fits the dragon motif from pretty much every culture on the planet.
And what have we done since the dawn of time?
Murder dragons.
Exactly. And these guys have been here since?
The dawn of time.
Yeah.
So there's just too many similarities with cultural dragon legends with the Groot slang. Elephant, snake-like creature. I could see where you get a depiction of a dragon out of that.
Well, it depends. Yeah, because dragons...
Definitely which dragon you're talking about.
Yeah, there's so many different dragon depictions from different cultures, but, you know, you got your long serpentine one, your more big winged ones, like a Game of Thrones type, but I can see if those had, like, big tusks coming out of the dragons, like their face, just like an elephant. I could see that.
But I don't know if they just meant the size of the animal. Like, the body was just so thick.
That it
was elephant-like.
Like, yeah.
Or, you know, just great size. The big camel in Africa. An elephant.
Like, just big and long. So you got big elephant, long snake.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I don't know where... I don't know how far that rabbit hole goes. But no, just the scales. Because a lot of cultures even talk about dragons being venomous. You know, a lot of ancient legends of dragons talk about that they actually didn't breathe fire. They had extremely potent venom. That it was like fire. It was so lethal.
Just like Jurassic Park.
There you go.
I know you hate that scene.
It's not. It's just. It's a movie monster. But,
you know, yeah, exactly.
The Dilophosaurus. They were actually huge.
Yeah.
They didn't have a frill, as far as we know, and they most likely didn't spurt tar.
Yeah, sticky. Yeah.
Even the animals
burning tar.
The spit venom. It still looks like venom.
I can still hear his screams and in my yes that whole scene. Poor Newman.
Throws the stick. Want the stick? Go get the stick.
Yeah.
Newman. But no, what do you think about these guys actually being dragons? And that they lived in this area for a certain period of time. They either moved on or got wiped out.
Well, I mean, we already covered pretty much all the similarities between them and dragons. Depictions, it lines up very much. And dragons are inherently kind of associated with being bad or evil. And they had nothing good to say about the Groot slang.
All right. So, it could be dragons. Could be dragons. My second to last one.
It's the one I ruined?
The Leviathan.
Yeah, the Leviathan.
The cave is said to connect to the sea. This is seriously what those stories from the Bible with Leviathan are said to be, a creature that's just pure destruction. It was just made to show man the power of God.
Right, yeah.
And that's kind of the Groot slang basal legend.
The origin story, yeah.
And this cave was supposed to be connected to the ocean. The Leviathan was supposed to be a giant crocodilian sea monster, super long, super aggressive, and it was supposed to spit fire, or it had smoke bellowing out of its nostrils. So it's kind of fire, venom, you know, this death. And it's supposed to be really toxic. So I don't know. There's just this whole connection, especially because they say the cave's connected to the sea.
Right, yeah. It's got the
what is this?
Water
is
connection
the
there.
The sleeping ground of the Leviathan.
Or it's just his last hold on Earth.
It could be just where he sleeps.
Okay.
This giant cave. Because it's supposed to be, if you take it biblically, there's a Leviathan. There are not many Leviathans.
Just one.
There is a Leviathan, a behemoth, which is also said to be somewhere probably in Africa.
What if they're all, like, all the holes around the earth are, it's like...
Have a Leviathan?
It's vacation home. He moves with the seasons. It's migrational.
Could be.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. There is some connection with Leviathan. Hatefulness towards people.
Right, yeah. I thought of it in the beginning because basically total destruction.
Yeah, definitely. The Groot slang is that.
And then they had to wipe it out, the gods, quote unquote, you know?
All right, you're never going to guess my last one.
Giant turtle.
No. Nope. It's crazy.
Salamander.
No.
Dang it. All right. I'm out of guesses.
It's just the Groot slang.
Its own thing.
It's just what they describe it is what it looks like. It just lives in these holes, in these caves. It may have been an animal that lived in Africa that we don't have on the fossil record, which happens.
Right.
Yeah. More than it doesn't for everybody at home. It happens more than it doesn't that there's animals that aren't on the fossil record. Their fossil record is very, very incomplete. So what if this Grootslang is a primitive reptile or reptilian-like creature? You know, I don't know how far back it goes. There could be just a handful of them left. They could be extinct now.
Right.
And, you know, there's just a handful of them left in Africa in the turn of the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of them. Because when we talked about the living dinosaurs or dinosaur-like creatures, that there was a lot of them seen in the 18 and early 1900s, and now they're mostly gone.
Right.
And it could be big game hunters just taking pot shots at them, and they go off somewhere and die.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think that this could just be a Grootslang. Like, the Grootslang could just be its own thing, whether it is giant snake.
The native's right.
Well, they describe it. It's a big tusked ancient reptile
mm-hmm.
that we just don't know about right now.
It's an animal that may still have a foothold here, may still be alive,
yeah.
but we just have never seen it before or recorded it.
So what one are you putting your money on?
I like the leftover, that giant, what was the snake? I had not the rock snake. The
Gigathropus?
One yeah, that one.
Something.
I like that.
That was a good one. That's a good fit.
I like that idea, and I like the dragon one.
Dragons are another good fit.
And obviously, just being the plain old Grootslang, you can't ever just rule that out. I mean, it's like saying Bigfoot's a Bigfoot. You know, that's what we mostly believe. It is what it is. It's not something else.
Yeah.
But so that's always the option. But I like the dragon, and I like the big that snake. I still can't remember the name.
Gigathropus. Which, and it could always, you can always say interdimensional. You know, you always go that route in caves, interdimensional portals.
Right. Yeah.
This is just somebody's gardener snake from Dimension X.
Right. Yeah.
No, I don't know. I love the Grootslang. There's not a lot of modern day stuff with it, but like we talked about, it could be getting lost in the shuffle of different names for the same thing.
Right.
But yeah, then this is a diamond area in Africa, which is bad.
Yeah.
It's bad. Usually, I don't know if there's, I don't know anything about the actual diamond mines that are nearby.
Yeah.
They could be fine. There are fine ones, as far as I understand, in Africa.
Maybe.
I think, because there's like community run ones.
Those are probably the fine ones, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't know anything about these two mines kind of in the area of the Wonder Hole.
Whether they're associated with, like,
yeah.
Tesla companies,
I don't know if it says, like,
Apple,
Musk at the end or, you know.
Microsoft.
Yeah.
It's a Gates special mine.
Anyways. No, so this is the start to season six. Science and magic and
Grootslangs
and Grootslangs.
And holes.
And holes. And special shout-out again to Mike from Cryptid HQ.
Yes,
it's his
Mike.
Favorite cryptid. And shout out to Sherwin from Sherwin Sketches, because that's who I got my Grootslang from. Yeah. Well, you got me for it. You got
I
it
bought
for
it
me.
For your birthday?
Probably. Because I was, yeah, because I couldn't go to the encounter quest.
Yeah, that's right. That's when I got the Grootslang.
No, so it is one I wanted to do forever, but I wanted to save it for a season opener because it's a special one. It's definitely a well-known one in Africa. And from that, I mean for the world.
Right, when
you talk of like European cryptids, what do you know? Nessie.
Right.
You know, it's like that. It's that for them. Anyways, I've been the great and powerful Mystery.
And I've been J-Clone6.
And we want to say thank you again for all the love and support, guys. It's been an amazing ride. It's going to be an amazing ride.
Much appreciated.
Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Cryptids of the Corn podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J-Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye!
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.